The Spotlight.
Welcome to Spotlight. Western imperialism has been exploiting the Western Asia region and looting its resources for decades at the least. The Westerners, led by the U.S., have waged wars on countries in the region. They've created and supported terror groups to wreak havoc in West Asia and wreck its people's lives. But the equation seems to be changing. In recent years and decades, resistance groups in the region have been gaining more power and popularity. And now, Palestinian resistance in Gaza has been impeding the Israeli war machine. Yemeni's operations in the Red Sea have hurt Israel's economy, and Iraq's resistance groups target American bases in Iraq and Syria, demanding the expulsion of U.S. forces from their country. Now, tonight we're going to look into the root causes of this popular growth of the resistance front in the region on Spotlight. Joining us on the program, we have writer and political analyst Ali Rizk, who's joining us from the Lebanese capital, Beirut. And also we have journalist, activist, and political analyst John Bosnich joining us from Belgrade.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Well, gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Mr. Rizk in the Lebanese capital, Beirut. Mr. Rizk, the Yemeni army says that the U.S. and the U.K. bear full responsibility for the attacks against their country, pledging to retaliate. Give us your thoughts on the nature of that retaliation and what you will be expecting. Also, tell us more about this defiant message that the Yemenis are sending to the U.S. and its allies, as they've been clear that these attacks will persist until Israel ends its crimes against Palestinians in Gaza.
Regarding the first part of your question about what kind of retaliation we might expect from the Houthi movement or from Ansar Allah, Ansar Allah has revealed that it is indeed a force to be reckoned with. Of course, it gained this reputation given that it was able to achieve victory against the Saudi Emirati coalition, which enjoyed strong Western backing. But I think that the latest operations reveal even more military expertise, if you would like. The operation, for example, the more recent one, which targeted some American and British ships, this was a very sophisticated attack which combined between drones and missiles. And by the way, it bears a lot of similarity to the methods employed by Hezbollah here in Lebanon. So I think that the Houthis do have the ability to launch a pretty strong attack, and it has to be pointed out that there will be a lot of targets. These sea areas, the Arabian Sea, Bab al-Mandib, there are quite a lot of targets for the Ansar Allah to choose from. So I do expect that there will be retaliation, and it could very well be, it depends, it could very well be a strong retaliation. On the other hand, it might be a proportionate retaliation, because the operation you saw last night or this morning, actually, very early this morning, from the Americans and from the British. It was a violation of Yemeni sovereignty, yes, but it wasn't like a very harsh operation, if you would like. Five people being killed. The British side said that it indicated or hinted between the lines that it wasn't after war. So we have to see how the Yemenis will do it, but no doubt they do have some strong military capabilities. Asked your question about the message of defiance which was delivered. I think that the Yemenis have proven themselves, as Sayyid Abdul Malik al-Houthi mentioned in his speech yesterday, to be at the forefront in defending the people of Gaza who are being subject to these daily killings. And I believe that all of this is part of the new Middle East. Yemen, Iraq, what we're seeing, the reaction which we're seeing is part of a new Middle East, which I think the Americans hadn't hoped for. I recall in 2006, then Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice said it was time for a new Middle East. But this Middle East, which is emerging right now, is totally different, I think, than the one the Americans had in mind.
John Bosnich, Hamas has called the U.S. and U.K. attacks on Yemen an uncalculated terrorist act. A political commentator that we spoke to here on Press TV also believes that the move was a miscalculation. Was this a miscalculated attack, in your opinion?
Well, it's obviously a mistake. I wouldn't call it such a small thing as a miscalculation. It's a grievous error in international law, and it's an act of aggression, unlawful, illegal, state-to-state aggression. So definitely the United States and England are making more mistakes, and I use the word more there because they are the major powers behind the Israeli operation and slaughter of countless Palestinians. So they are tying their fate more closely to Israel, and since Israel is losing this conflict, this is going to cost a lot to America and to England as well.
Ali Rizk in Beirut, how important has the unified response been from the resistance in the region in retaliation for the Gaza war? There's Lebanon's Hezbollah, Yemen's Ansarla resistance movement, and the armed forces of the country, resistance groups in Syria and Iraq as well.
Well, I think that most important of all, it's making the situation more costly for the Israelis. If you were to talk about 2006, for example, I remember back then Hezbollah was basically standing alone in confronting the Israeli side. Of course, we have to mention that Iran did support Hezbollah, Syria also. But set those two countries apart, there was no other, real support for Hezbollah. Indeed, some of the Arab countries back then were even against Hezbollah and rooting for the Israeli side. So things have changed a lot since 2006. Yemen in particular has emerged as a force to be reckoned with. The Syrian crisis, ironically, has actually strengthened the axis led by Iran, whilst the aim maybe of some of those who were behind the crisis in Syria was to weaken the Iranian-led bloc. What's happened actually is that this bloc has further strengthened. Hezbollah played a part, and now we have a Hezbollah model, if you would like, present in Syria. In Iraq as well, you have a group which is called Kata'ib Hezbollah, or the Hezbollah Brigades. So you have what I would call the expansion of the Hezbollah model in the region, and this unified, or the united fronts, I think, that reflects that very issue, the spread of the Iranian-Hezbollah model in this region, and that's costing the Israelis a lot, and I think more importantly it's costing the Americans, because what you've seen is that in particular the Iraqi side has been targeting American bases not only in Iraq and in Syria. Go back 10 years ago, for example, I don't think that the Americans would have been subject to such retaliation or such a response. So the United Front, I think one of the most important impacts it has is to make U.S. support for Israel more costly. Now, the Americans, at the same time, it has to be said, they don't appear to be backing down for the time being, they don't appear to be reining in Israel. You know, there are some attempts, but the American pressure, I think, hasn't still reached that very, very firm level. And this takes us back, you know, we are, you know, to this question, why this American support for Israel, whilst this support is actually backfiring and harming American interests. And so the big question raised is, for how long will America tolerate its interests being put in jeopardy just for the sake of the Israeli ally? That, I think, speaks a lot to the dilemma or the major problem U.S. policy in the Middle East suffers from.
John Bosnich, reactions are pouring in following the U.S.-led attack on Yemen, with Iran and resistance movements in the region strongly condemning the attacks. Iran has, as you mentioned earlier, denounced the violation of Yemen's sovereignty and territorial integrity, and it also says that the attacks will foment insecurity in the region and beyond. So in the region and beyond was the highlight of that statement coming from Tehran. Please unpack that for us.
Well, when we talk about in the region and beyond, first of all, we're talking about the actual conflict affecting Yemen and the region around Yemen. But what has to be understood here is that the American military presence in the region is openly exposed and becomes a legitimate target once they take aggressive actions against other states. We know that American forces are unlawfully, both against the law of Syria and against international law, present and stealing oil from Syria. One should expect some kind of a targeting and a response to those unlawful American occupation forces. American forces are still present, and American interests are still present in Iraq. Those should most likely be coming under some kind of pressure in the near future. And what has happened is the Anglo-American imperial influence in the region is bringing the local nations together. And there is no reason why Palestine cannot enter into a military self-defense pact with Yemen, which requires Yemen to come to the military defense of Palestine if Palestine continues to be attacked by Israel, backed by England and America. So what England and America have done by giving carte blanche to Israel is they have created a situation in which all of the victims of their colonial era and of Israel's aggression will now be drawn organically together to defend themselves. And as history will teach you, those who are defending their own land generally defeat those who are attacking from outside. This does not look good for the Anglo-American Empire. It looks worse for Israel, and it does signify a turning point in the history of the region.
Ali Risk, Islamic Jihad Resistance Group says that the aggression on Yemen is part of Western support for Israel and shows that Washington is managing the Gaza war. Lebanon's Hezbollah movement also said that the aggression is yet another proof of the U.S. complicity in what it called catastrophes in Gaza and the region. Was the attack on Yemen even more of a revelation of how the U.S. fully supports the massacre in Gaza?
Is that a question to me?
I've been following this issue for quite some, for the past week or so, what's been written in the Western press about the Houthi movement and about the Yemeni front. There are some senior scholars, very senior scholars, people like Kenneth Pollack, Catherine Zimmerman, and other well-known American scholars who are, at least in the U.S., considered to be, you know, the brightest minds when it comes to the Middle East. All of these voices, or the high majority of them, have been focusing on the necessity of the American administration responding to the Houthis. When it comes to Iraq, when it comes to Syria, I haven't noticed, you know, these calls or this very vocal atmosphere calling to take action. But when it comes to Bab al-Mandeb, the Yemeni front, there have been a lot of calls to take action, and not to mention calls coming from within Congress, or some members of Congress, I'm not generalizing. So I think that the Biden administration felt that it had to do something in response to what was taking place. And this operation, again, it was a violation, yes, but it was quite a small-scale operation, as if the Biden administration saying, look, you know, I've done something, I've taken action. It seems to me it was more an attempt to silence certain critics more than it was to accomplish anything else. That's how I view the situation. I might be mistaken, and that's not something which we're not used to for the Americans. Often the American side takes action just to show it's taking action. If you recall Donald Trump, when he launched the Tomahawk missiles against Syria, the main motive for him for doing that was to distinguish himself from his predecessor, Barack Obama, who at the very end withdrew or didn't go ahead with a strike he had promised to, because if you recall, they spoke about the chemical weapons red line, etc., and then where there was a chemical weapons attack which they pinned on the Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, but Obama backed down, he didn't go ahead and implement that red line. And I think what you're seeing now with Yemen is quite similar. You have a president who's responding to certain domestic pressures. Now, I think the danger lies in the fact that after carrying out this operation, what if the Yemenis retaliate? What will the American response to that be? Because Biden, particularly now in an election year, I think wants to be seen as being some kind of a tough guy, promoting that tough guy image. So if the Yemenis retaliate, you might see, possibly, I'm not certain, you might see another American retaliation, and then the situation could snowball. I think that's the dangerous scenario.
John Bosnich, the Iraqi prime minister, has said that Baghdad wants a quick withdrawal of the quote-unquote destabilizing U.S. forces from Iraq. Now, Baghdad has not yet set a deadline, but still, Iraqi politicians, they have a historic opportunity to expel the U.S. from Iraq. How close are we to seeing that day?
I think we're looking at a departure demand from Iraq within the next 2 to 3 months. I think it's that close, and I think that this is going to further destabilize the ability of the United States and its English backers to project power into the region. I think this is a critical historic step forward for Iraq and for the people of the region as well, and I think that a properly delivered legal demand that the American forces recognize the sovereignty of Iraq is the way to start this, and then to pursue this through all of the existing international organizations. And this puts America in the place that it used to say the rest of the countries in the region were, and that is, it makes America an international rogue state.
Ali Risk, with all the years of the U.S. and its allies trying to exert their hegemony in the region, a point now has been reached where the people of the region are quite unified in the demand that the U.S. and foreign forces must leave the region. How important and significant is this unison that's being seen now?
Well, I think, yes, it is significant, and it just goes to show you how Israel is becoming a burden for the United States. These popular demands for the Americans to leave, you might not have heard them had America not taken this very supportive stance of Israel in the current conflict. You know, there are disagreements amongst a lot of amongst the people of the region when it comes to certain issues, but when it comes to Palestine, the populations at the very least appear to be united. And so against that backdrop, the American support for the Israeli onslaught on Gaza is costing America and is leading to the demands for the Americans to leave. I would, however, be cautious about, you know, expecting America to withdraw within a few months. America will not withdraw without a fight. You know, you have this addiction, you have the deep state, which is deeply committed to having a presence, America having a presence. And one of the main motives, let's be clear, of the American presence in Iraq is to counter Iran, to have a presence near Iran, because Iran is considered the main competitor of America and, most importantly, the main challenge towards Israel. So, you know, the Americans are not going to leave without a strong fight. And I think that expecting them to leave in a few months, I think that might be a bit far-fetched.
John Bosnich, in spite of all the efforts to weaken the resistance, why is the resistance front still thriving in the region?
Oh, I just want to correct something first. I'm expecting a request for the departure of the American forces to come within the next 2 to 3 months. How long it takes for the U.S. forces to leave is another matter, and I agree with your other commentator on that point. But the request has to come from Iraq as a sign of solidarity with the Palestinian people, and I believe that the crisis in Palestine is going to rise to such a level within the next 2 to 3 months that such a request will be made. How long it takes to implement, that's another question. But back to your question, I do think that we're seeing a shift in the entire geopolitical situation in the region. I think Israel has gone too far. I think that America is used to taking orders in the region from Israel. And I think that the blowback that nobody is talking about is that the crimes being committed by Israel now in Palestine are going to hobble the influence of the Israel lobby in the U.S. Congress. And if that happens, if the Israel lobby loses its predominance in U.S. politics, it could change the nature of U.S. politics, and it could change the actual behavior of the U.S. empire. This is a serious and major challenge to Israel's influence, not just locally, but Israel's lobbying power in Washington. And I'm very much looking forward to seeing American democracy overcome the piles of money that Israel has been using to bribe members of Congress.
All right, Mr. Risk, very briefly, if you may, I saw you nodding there. Do you agree with Mr. Bosnich?
Yes, very, very important points. Indeed, if, you know, they can overcome the Israeli lobby, that would be something monumental or a very, very new phase in American politics, because, you know, American policy in the Middle East is very much dictated by Israel. It's very much done to serve the Israeli side. What Biden has done, the approach he's taken with the current conflict, does not bode well for American interests in any way whatsoever. It only serves Israel. Very quickly, just an example about Yemen. Yemen is home to AQAP, Al-Qaeda, in the Arabian Peninsula. That is considered to be the most dangerous branch of Al-Qaeda to the U.S. If you recall, there was an attack in Pensacola in Florida, which was adopted, or the AQAP claimed responsibility for that attack. Now they're launching a war against a party which has a history of fighting Al-Qaeda. And that, I think, is completely contradictory to American interests.
Okay, that's all the time we have for tonight. Thanks to my guests, Ali Risk, writer and political analyst, joining us from Beirut, and Mr. John Bosnich, journalist, activist, and political analyst, speaking to us from Belgrade. And special thanks to you for staying with us on tonight's Spotlight. It's good night for now.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the compassionate, the merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarisi with you with another edition of Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll have a look at the verses of chapter Nur, the 24th chapter of the Holy Quran, and different commentary points of these verses. Dear listeners, we have reached the 61st verse of the chapter. Now let's listen to this verse.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم ليس على الأعمى حرج ولا على الأعرج حرج ولا على المريض حرج ولا على أنفسكم أن تأكلوا من بيوتكم أو بيوت آبائكم أو بيوت أمهاتكم أو بيوت إخوانكم أو بيوت أخواتكم أو بيوت أعمامكم أو بيوت عماتكم أو بيوت أخوالكم أو بيوت خالاتكم أو ما ملكتم مفاتحه أو صديقكم ليس عليكم جناح أن تأكلوا جميعا أو أشتاتا فإذا دخلتم بيوتا فسلموا على أنفسكم تحية من عند الله مباركة طيبة كذلك يبين الله لكم الآيات لعلكم تعقلون.
There is not upon the blind any guilt, nor upon the lame any guilt, nor upon the ill any guilt, nor upon yourselves if you eat from your own houses, or the houses of your fathers, or the houses of your mothers, or the houses of your brothers, or the houses of your sisters, or the houses of your father's brothers, or the houses of your father's sisters, or the houses of your mother's brothers, or the houses of your mother's sisters, or from houses whose keys you possess, or from the house of your friend. There is no blame upon you whether you eat together or separately. But when you enter houses, give greetings of peace upon each other, a greeting from Allah, blessed and good. Thus does Allah make clear to you the verses of ordinance, that you may understand.
The 61st verse says, لَيْسَ عَلَى الْأَعْمَى حَرَجٌ وَلَا عَلَى الْأَعْرَجِ حَرَجٌ وَلَا عَلَى الْمَرِيضِ حَرَجٌ وَلَا عَلَى أَنفُسِكُمْ أَن تَأْكُلُوا مِن بُيُوتِكُمْ. There is no blame upon the blind, nor any blame upon the lame, nor any lame upon the sick, nor on yourselves that ye eat from your houses. So, the verse continues these different exceptions. أَوْ بُيُوتِ أَبَائِكُمْ أَوْ بُيُوتِ أُمَّهَاتِكُمْ or the houses of your fathers, or the houses of your mothers. أَوْ بُيُوتِ إِخْوَانِكُمْ أَوْ بُيُوتِ أَخَوَاتِكُمْ or the houses of your brothers and your sisters. أَوْ بُيُوتِ أَعْمَامِكُمْ أَوْ بُيُوتِ عَمَّاتِكُمْ or the houses of your father's brothers, or the houses of your father's sisters. أَوْ بُيُوتِ أَخْوَالِكُمْ أَوْ بُيُوتِ خَالَاتِكُمْ or the houses of your mother's sisters, or the houses of your mother's brothers. أَوْ مَا مَلَكْتُمْ مَفَاتِحَهُ or the houses that you hold those keys. أَوْ صَدِيقِكُمْ or from the houses of your friends. And then, after mentioning all these exceptions, the verse says, لَيْسَ عَلَيْكُمْ جُنَاحٌ أَن تَأْكُلُوا جَمِيعًا أَوْ أَشْتَاتًا. There is no problem, no blame upon you. No sin shall be it for you, whether you eat together or apart. فإذا دخلتم بيوتا فسلموا على أنفسكم تحية من عند الله مباركة طيبة. But the point is, the verse says, when you enter houses, salute one another with a greeting from Allah. تحية من عند الله مباركة طيبة, blessed and good. كذلك يبين الله لكم الآيات. And thus does Allah make clear His revelations for you. So, in this regard, as we said, when we look at the traditions, we see that Imam Baqir alayhi salam, for example, said, before Islam, the blind, the lame, and the sick were not allowed to eat food with healthy people. And after this verse was sent down and revealed, these people were also allowed to eat food in group. So that's why the name of these three groups, A'ma, A'raj, wa Marid, are mentioned in the beginning of the verse. So since the previous verses discussed taking permission at certain times, or for example, when entering special places or other parts, this verse mentions an exception from this ordinance, indicates that a group can enter their relatives' houses and the like, as the verse mentions, بُيُوتِ آبَائِكُمْ أُمَّهَاتِكُمْ إِخْوَانِكُمْ أَخَوَاتِكُمْ أَعْمَامِكُمْ, and the like. You can enter all these houses without them knowing, without you taking permission. They can even eat food without having permission.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
word. In this series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
وتمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom.
So, as we know, the verse talks about this exception and mentions that there is no blame. لَيْسَ عَلَى الْأَعْمَى حَرَجٌ وَلَا عَلَيْكُمْ, for example. So there is no blame nor on yourselves. So the point is that there is no heaviness, there is no kind of sin for you, or the believers who are like you. Some have said that the sick and poor did not eat and associate with other people because they thought people might not like their company. And after this verse was revealed, they felt free to gather with other people. So, the verse continues discussing other exceptions and other points. And since the verse is discussing the matter of exceptions, when it reaches the part where it asks for, where it asks the people to ask for permission, it talks about permission for entering other areas and other parts as well. as we shall discuss that later on in the next program. Thank you for staying with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.ir. Until the next program, take care.
Things always worked for me. Worry ends when faith begins.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pourreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Yemenis from all walks of life took to the streets of the capital Sana'a to decry the US and Britain strikes that targeted several cities across Yemen early Friday in support of Israel. They also denounced the US-drafted resolution on the Red Sea that was adopted by the United Nations Security Council shortly before the strikes. The protesters also reaffirmed their support for their country's pro-Palestine operations despite the Western aggression.
The strikes launched by America and Britain were aimed at discouraging the Yemenis from carrying out military operations in the Red Sea. But Mr. Abdul Malik al-Houthi was clear in his speech that no one would be able to stop the Yemenis from supporting their Palestinian brothers. We in the Popular Front and Palestine appreciate what our Yemeni brothers are doing. And in 75 years, we have not found anyone who stood with us like the Yemeni people, despite the American-British threat.
The protesters chanted slogans in support of the Yemeni armed forces' operations against Israeli-linked ships in the Red Sea. They stressed that despite the Western aggression against their country, they will not back down from their position in supporting the Palestinian people, whatever the cost.
The Yemeni armed forces were anticipating these strikes, and our position is clear and will not change, that we will continue to prevent Israeli-linked ships from reaching the occupied ports until medicine and food are allowed to enter Gaza, and the genocide committed by Israel is stopped. The American-British strikes violated Yemen's sovereignty, but did not affect the capabilities of the Yemeni army.
The strikes followed the UN Security Council's adoption of a draft resolution submitted by Washington and Japan that demanded an immediate end to attacks by Yemeni forces on Israeli-owned or Israeli-bound ships in the Red Sea. Yemeni officials have strongly condemned the strikes and vowed a painful response to them.
The crowd here is sending a strong message to the US and the UK. The demonstrators vow that the aggression against the country will not go unpunished. They also say operations against Israeli-linked vessels in the Red Sea will end if Israel puts an end to its genocidal war on Gaza. Abdul Latif Loshali, Sana'a.
It has been a historic 2 days at the International Court of Justice, where the former apartheid state of South Africa instituted proceedings against the Israeli occupation for their genocide against the Palestinian people. South Africa made a compelling case, evidencing clearly that the Genocide Convention has been violated under several categories.
What South Africa has done is point very specifically to the violations of the Genocide Convention, Articles 2A, 2B, 2C and 2D, across all levers of depriving the Palestinians of food, of water, of displacement and of killing of civilians.
In addition to the large pro-Palestinian crowds gathered outside of The Hague, demonstrating their support for a ceasefire, of which included prominent political figures from Ireland, Barcelona, Belgium and the UK, 900 popular movements, unions, political parties, faith-based and secular organizations have signed an open letter backing South Africa's case. Representatives of the occupation regime sought to blame the resistance and called the picture painted in court distorted and a manipulative description of reality. In ignoring the context of the 75-year occupation, their defense has been labeled as illogical and a desperate attempt to score points. What is also on trial here is the United Nations' ability to deliver on its own promises.
This is one of the biggest tests in modern times for the West, for democracy, and for international institutions such as this. And I'm hoping that they can rise to the challenge.
The repetition of the propaganda they've peddled these past 3 months will not work this time. We have seen the mask fall. And the Western world, which has long portrayed itself as the bastion of democracy, now has to prove that it can extend those same rights to the Global South. Latifa Abu Chakra, the International Court of Justice, The Hague.
In retaliation for a U.S. deadly attack on Yemeni naval forces that took place last month, Yemen's armed forces have carried out a joint military operation against an American ship in the Red Sea. The spokesman for the Yemeni armed forces, Yahya Saria, said the ship, which was targeted with ballistic missiles and drones, was supporting Israel.
The naval forces, the missile force, and unarmed air force of the Yemeni armed forces carried out a joint military operation with a large number of ballistic and naval missiles and drones, targeting an American ship that was providing support to the Zionist entity. The operation came as an initial response to the treacherous attack on our naval forces by the American enemy forces.
On December 31st, 10 Yemeni naval forces were killed in a U.S. attack in the Red Sea after successfully preventing an Israeli-linked vessel from heading to a port in occupied Palestine. Yemeni armed forces have been conducting operations against Israeli-linked ships in the area in retaliation for the regime's genocidal war on Gaza that began in October. Officials say the military operation that targeted the U.S. vessel is the beginning of a new phase of Yemen's retaliatory attacks in support of Palestinians. They added, Washington, a staunch ally of Israel, should expect more similar assaults as the Yemeni army has vowed to continue supporting Palestinians.
As mentioned in the Yemeni Armed Forces statement, this operation is an initial response to the Americans and their intervention in the Red Sea to protect ships heading to the Israeli ports, and there will be other responses that will follow this operation. The Yemeni leadership has vowed that it'll retaliate against the Americans, and they should expect other operations soon.
The U.S. has formed a naval coalition to purportedly safeguard commercial traffic in the Red Sea last month. That's why Yemen has stressed that ships that have no connection to Israel can safely sail in the region. Yemen said its anti-Israel operations will continue despite the U.S. move.
Experts say the Yemeni armed forces' recent operation has proven that it is prepared for all options. They warn that the U.S. acts of aggression against the Yemeni forces could spark a regional war. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
A report leaked to the Washington Post revealed major concerns about Israeli Premier Benjamin Netanyahu, who is currently indicted on corruption, bribery, and fraud charges. Washington reportedly fears that Netanyahu views a long war with Palestine, which also expands to include Lebanon, as the, quote, key to his political survival. Many are shocked that Israeli politicians could have murdered over 23,000 innocent Palestinians and wounded 60,000 others so far just to stay in power and out of prison.
The power is in the hands of the United States. And if the United States thinks that this is happening, then they could stop it from happening today. And that is, in essence, the issue here. I'm not a psychologist, and I'm not going to psychologize about whether Netanyahu is a psychopath, a megalomaniac, somebody who just wants to stay in power for as long as he can stay in power. I do believe that he'll be gone as soon as this crisis is over.
If perception takes root that Netanyahu is fomenting what is denounced worldwide as genocide for personal gain, then U.S. public opinion may turn against continued armed support for Israel, without which Tel Aviv's war aims would likely crumble immediately. Polls now show support for Palestine has doubled since the start of the conflict. It's mainly being driven by young adults, with nearly 70% of people under the age of 35 saying they disapprove of Israel's actions since October 7th. The report came on the eve of U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken's latest trip to Israel. Blinken made the usual proclamations of unshakable U.S. support for Israel, despite all the war crimes.
I think Biden is in the grip of neocons like Blinken and Victoria Nuland, who want to play with the world as their toy and break it, and who think they can get away with and risk everything and get away with everything. And if they can't, it's no skin off their nose. It's the world and the United States that suffers. So it's been shocking and horrible, but not that surprising to see Biden go 100% in for the genocide occurring in Gaza right now.
The Washington Post article included a secret report from the U.S. Defense Intelligence Agency. It cast major doubt that Israel can even defeat Hezbollah, as they are already having such difficulty subduing Hamas in Gaza. Ramin Mazahari, Chicago.
Florence's Mayer Pediatric Hospital Foundation is known in Tuscany for its care of critically ill children. In October last year, the honorary consul of the Israeli regime for Tuscany, Lombardy and Emilia-Romagna regions, Marco Carrai, was appointed as the president of the hospital foundation in Florence. Carrai has never concealed his full alignment with Benjamin Netanyahu's brutal policy in the Palestinian-occupied territories, following Israel's atrocious campaign in Gaza, where more than 10,000 children have been slaughtered over the past 3 months. Tens of doctors and healthcare workers launched an online petition calling for Carrai's immediate removal.
Carrai is well known for his position on the conflict in Gaza. Never once has he distanced himself from the atrocious killing of thousands of children and innocent people by Israel over the past weeks. How can he be the president of a hospital foundation tasked with providing medical care to children?
More than 7,000 people have signed the petition so far. According to the UN, hospitals and other vital medical infrastructure in Gaza and the West Bank have been attacked nearly 600 times since war erupted in the territory. Meanwhile, the International Medical Care Organization Doctors Without Borders has been forced to evacuate its staff from Gaza's Al-Aqsa Hospital. The hospital, which serves as the only functioning medical facility in Gaza's central area, has been subjected to relentless Israeli bombing and artillery fire, branded by many as full-fledged war crimes.
Non hanno fatto un grande lavoro in questa occasione.
Unfortunately, Western countries have gone too far in supporting Israel. 23 out of 36 medical facilities in Gaza have been knocked out. The West's double standard is tarnishing its credibility. The public opinion is distancing itself from our institution.
Also, medics at the only functioning hospital in the Al-Balah Governorate in central Gaza have been forced to cease life-saving and other critical activities and leave amid increasing Israeli raids, the UN World Health Organization has warned. Max Civili, Rome.
The West has been saying for years that Muslim women cannot progress in anything because of their religion. Iranian women have denied this in practice. Daughter of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, Fatima Zahra, peace be upon her, a strong woman, caring daughter, and a great teacher, is one of the most important figures Iranian women look up to. Iranian women have made remarkable progress in various fields, including science, art, and sport since the Islamic Revolution, looking up to women like Hazrat Zahra, peace be upon her, as their role model for everything they do. Successful women in different scientific fields believe that the presence of girls in academic circles has become outstanding in recent years.
I work as a professor in the University of Tehran in the field of food industry. I'm among highly cited researchers in the international scientific circles. In recent years, the number of our female students has increased. They have stepped into scientific fields and they are very well progressed.
Women have tried to find their right position in the country, the position that they deserve, as they have worked so hard for it.
Today, Muslim Iranian women have managed to make great achievements while observing the hijab and following Islamic teachings, proving Western propaganda wrong. Farzana Shuryan, Tehran.
Under the title, Your Blood Has Become a Storm in Palestine, the Iranian embassy and the cultural chancellery in Damascus have organized a ceremony to commemorate the fourth anniversary of the martyrdom of the Lieutenant General Haj Qasem Soleimani. In his opening speech, the Iranian ambassador in Syria explained the significant role of Commander Soleimani in fighting terrorism in the region.
Both America and Israel are well aware that Haj Qasem played a significant role in the defeat of the United States in Iraq, as well as in Lebanon, Palestine, and Syria. He had an active and important role in defending the people of these countries. Now, 4 years after the martyrdom of Haj Qasem and his comrades, we see that the axis of resistance is at its peak strength.
Senior Syrian officials, Palestinian faction leaders, intellectual figures, and ambassadors from several countries attended the event. They praised Commander Soleimani's great contributions to the victories of the whole resistance front, calling him a symbol of humanity and resistance.
The martyr excelled with his boundless generosity and absolute selflessness. He embodied the epitome of love and giving. Salute to the brave soldiers. Soldiers of the Syrian army, to the martyrs of truth and duty, and salute to the martyr of Palestine, Qasem Soleimani.
Haj Qasem Soleimani elevated the Palestinian resistance to the required combat level. Everything we witness today, from tunnels and rockets pounding Tel Aviv to the resilience of the defenders of Gaza, is the result of the care and training provided by Martyr Qasem Soleimani for the Palestinian people, Hamas, and the Islamic Jihad.
4 years later, people are still talking about him. He is still alive. His legacy will endure much longer than any of his killers will be remembered. We are here to celebrate a man whose leadership, whose examples in terms of military, in terms of religions, in terms of political ideas, will forever live, not only within the Iranian people, but also within the people of the entire region.
As an expression of their love and loyalty to those who defended their cause, shared their concerns, and gave their lives to liberate Al-Quds, documentaries and photos were put on display, showcasing the life and achievements of the late commanders حاج قاسم سليماني، أبو مهدي المهندس، سيد رازي موسوي، and شيخ صالح العروري.
Once again, Syrians and Palestinians remind the world that the legacy of the late commander Haj Qasem Soleimani will always live on, not only in their consciousness, but rather through great actions and achievements like Al-Aqsa Flood Operation. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
Illinois Senator Dick Durbin has been called the oldest friend in Congress of AIPAC, the influential pro-Zionist lobbying committee. Protesters gathered outside his home to demand that the second highest ranking Democratic senator stop supporting Israel's latest war on Gaza. But then activists grew tired of being ignored. Protesters crossed from Senator Durbin's high-class residence onto historic Lakeshore Drive along Lake Michigan. Traffic is shut down in both directions on the most important road in the city in a rare and powerful example of local political activism. Protesters told angry motorists that the person they should be blaming was Senator Durbin.
Senator Dick Durbin actually represents the biggest Palestinian constituent population in the United States. He has a duty to be on the front lines of calling for a ceasefire in Gaza.
When police refused to release one of two activists arrested, protesters refused to move for hours.
This is not a religious issue. It's not a political issue. It's a humanitarian crisis. It's an issue that is affecting everybody in the world, or most people, and everybody wants a resolution. So we hope for a peaceful resolution. That's why we're out here.
The Arab population in the United States is about half of the Jewish population, but Arab influence in American politics and culture is relatively non-existent. For over two decades, open discrimination has been constant, as are hypocritical double standards.
I was in Palestine on October 7th. So I've lived my whole life in America. I lived in Palestine for 4 years, but we came here and I grew up here. I was raised here. But I feel like my identity as an American is shattered anytime something happens. And I see that my American colleagues and classmates and friends all of a sudden turn a blind eye when it comes to Palestinian life. And it's very disappointing. And it's especially when you come back and you see that your own tax dollars are being put towards this genocide.
Since October 7th, public opinion has shifted massively against Israel, especially among young voters. That may embolden activists to try even more attention-demanding protests against Israel's atrocities and murder in Palestine. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
این چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می‌کند ذکر خدا، ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allahu ya Allah subhanallah. Allahu ya Allah walhamdulillah. Allahu wa la ilaha illa Allah. Allahu ya Allah wallahu akbar.
This is a short part of Imam Khomeini's speech. Not being negligent of giving thanks for the blessings of Allah. When we go to the war fronts, the youth are actively engaged in that manner that are sacrificing their lives. When we visit the hospitals, we see the sick in that manner. The disabled, those that have been disabled in the war, those that have been injured in the war, have such Islamic morals. What was the gendarmerie in those times and what it is now? How was the army and how is it now? Who were the personnel in the army staff and who are the personnels now? Thank Allah, everything has changed. We must thank Allah and safeguard this. To safeguard this is that we be together.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله Dear audience, welcome to a new episode of Spring of the Truth from IRIB English Radio. Well, about the subject of freedom, Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi said, nobody may impose anything over you, and you are free to determine your destiny. I hope you will go through these electoral stages with more thought, prudence, and enlightenment. Well, Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi has undertaken very useful discussion in this regard. According to Imam rahmatullah alayhi, man can only choose if he is free. Once we have the right to choose to be free, we can pick and choose whatever we like. This freedom is not political, social, or cultural. Rather, it is above all of these, and they all emanate from it. This freedom is the natural freedom. Here, we do not wish to embark